The title we decided to work with for today is Changing the Dream. And this is something that's come up in my work in the last few months very strongly and resonates very much with Sandra's work. As a background for that, and I don't know what understanding you bring with you, but there is a basic principle that we always live in a dream. Like Shakespeare said, there are such stuff as dreams are made on. We live in a dream. We create a dream. We live in a personal dream, which is all of our fantasies, all of our desires, all of our expectations, what we project onto life. This is our personal dream. It can be a successful dream. It can be a, I guess, a destructive dream. And then we have the collective dream, which are like the hopes, aspirations, and also fears of us as a collective society. And what most people are aware of, who are aware of anything, is that our collective dream now has become self-destructive to such a point that we're a species that is destroying its own ecosystem. And when the dream of any species starts to destroy its own ecosystem, then something has obviously gone wrong. There are different approaches to how to deal with that. And one is this sort of scientific approach. We've got to go out and help the planet, an ecological approach. And this is, I think, lacking in a certain awareness of the underlying structure of life, and also the lacking the awareness of the impact our dream has upon life. That it is, in fact, this material scientific dream, this idea that through science, through technology, through materialism, we can have a better, more fulfilling life, that is actually creating the problem. So there has to be a deeper answer to it. What is interesting is people are now aware on an individual level that if you hit a crisis in your own life, you should go within to try and have a deeper understanding of the forces that have created that crisis. And this is, many schools of therapy are built in different ways upon that premise, whether you take the model of you have to go back to your childhood inside and untangle some of the forces that got constricted, or whether you take an archetypal approach, you have to go and make a new relationship with the archetypes, or a shamanic approach, you have to go and rediscover your power animal and be healed by it. These are all now different ways of dealing with this personal crisis. You go within, you try and change the structure underlying the patterns of existence in a way. You try and change the forces in your own life so you can have a more creative, fulfilling life. And in some ways, if you take a spiritual dimension to that, then you can have a life that is in tune with your soul. And so your soul can begin to nourish you and heal you, and you can have a more beneficial life. And in a way, to take it one step further, you can live a dream that is more in harmony with your soul. You can live a dream that is beneficial to your soul, that expresses your soul's purpose in life. There are many different ways this dream can reflect your soul's purpose. But it seems few people are prepared to take it the next stage to say, look, what we do with ourselves, we can also do with the whole. And this is where you take the ancient symbol of the individual man as a microcosm of the whole, what the Sufis call the lesser Adam and the greater Adam, or as above, so below in alchemical language, that what happens within the individual can also happen within the whole. The difficulty is in our culture, we have begun to get some of the tools for personal development. But the tools for working with the energy structure of the whole have mostly been lost. I think there are some shamanic traditions that in their own culture hold that. Like, for example, the Kogi in South America. I haven't had direct interaction with them, probably Sandra knows more about that than I do. But for most of us in the West, the tools of how to work with the energy structure of the whole of life, we don't have them anymore. I think in the West they were actually quite systematically repressed by the Catholic Church when they got rid of the Gnostics, and later, for example, when the Inquisition was started to get rid of the Cathars, and a lot of the feminine mysteries, which were labeled witchcraft, were also systematically repressed and eradicated. We are in this situation of needing to do a certain work, but the traditional tools of how to do that work we don't have. And this is both creates a difficulty, but it also, as in all steps of evolution, creates an opportunity for us to rediscover them in a new way. Because, as in all parts of what it really means to be a human being, they are within us. For example, in our present culture, we have had to relearn the language of dreams in the past 20, 30, 40 years. Our culture had forgotten the language of dreams, this primal ancient language that belongs to all human beings, an understanding of the wisdom of symbols and images and how they speak to us in this primordial language that is older than verbal language. And we have had to rediscover that and, in a way, reawaken our understanding of this part of ourselves. And I think we can take the same step into rediscovering the wisdom of working with the whole. But it needs a certain inner alignment with the whole. And at the moment, we are culturally focused on our individual self. We are taught either materially or spiritually to be here for ourselves. And so at the very beginning of today, we should all like take a step inwardly, consciously, away from this focus on our individual self towards the energy of the whole. And it's a very real energy, and one can work with it. Just like one's own soul is a very real living substance within oneself, and if you turn towards it, it turns towards you and it begins to speak to you. Because this is part of the relationship and dialogue that is really central to life, even though we have forgotten it as a culture. So in exactly the same way, we can take a step, turn away from our individual self towards this living energy of the whole, which is present everywhere at all times. This is part of the mystery of the whole. It is never anywhere else. And people who have had mystical experiences of oneness, of this essence of life, have seen that. It isn't somewhere else. It is in every breath you breathe. And in fact, there are many spiritual practices using the breath to remind one of that. Every breath we breathe is life breathing us. But if one can take an awareness of the whole, the energy of the whole, this living substance of life, which is here, of which we are a part, otherwise we wouldn't be breathing, we wouldn't be functioning, and it needs our attention. And it needs our attention individually, and here we can do another work, which is to give it our attention as a group. And as most of you are aware, a group of people who really put their attention towards something is very, very powerful. It is both an individual and also a combined effort, a combined intention to recreate a relationship with the whole and then to work with that relationship, not just on a mental level, but on an energy level, with the energy field that is the whole of life that is present here. And the beauty of a relationship with the whole is that it is life. And life is very, very, very old. And life has been through many, many traumatic experiences in this planet over the millions of years. And it has the wisdom that comes from those experiences, and it also has the wisdom that comes from its own divine intention. Just like you have a divine intention within you, and part of all spiritual practice is to connect with that divine intention and then live in relationship with it. This is what is called living a guided life. Life itself is not something other, and it has a divine intention. It is not something abstract, because life itself is an expression of the divine. And the Sufis, they always say, I was a hidden treasure and I longed to be known, so I created the world. So this world is an expression of a divine intention. It is not our intention. And we don't even know, I was talking to Sandra about this just before we started, we don't know the purpose of the world. We don't know how it sees this present moment of crisis and transformation. But we can work with it. We can open ourselves to this dimension of life and say, I am here to participate with you. In exactly the same way as in spiritual practices, we open ourselves to that dimension of the divine and say, I am here to participate with you. But because our culture has, in the last millennia, created this split between the divine and life, between the light, the transcendent image of God, and the divine that is present in life, we have to reclaim the divine presence in life just in order to do that work. This world is none other than the divine. Carl Jung talked about this light in nature, this divine light in nature, the lumen naturae of the alchemists. And we have to reclaim a relationship with it. And it's slightly different to what he called the lumen Dei, which is the light of the transcendent divinity. It's a different light, or it is expressed differently. And we can work with it, and we can work with it now, here, today. And we can create a relationship with it, and it will tell us what it needs us to do. Because life is a dialogue. Life is a relationship. And life is alive. And as I say, there is within life this center of divine intention. I only discovered that personally myself about 3 or 4 years ago, when I was taken there. I was taken far, far away out of myself, and I was taken to this center of divine consciousness of the world, this place of pure divine intention that is the spiritual purpose of the world. And it is present within life. Otherwise, life would not exist. Life would fall apart. Life would become completely meaningless. In the same way as if you lose that center of divine intention within yourself, life becomes what Shakespeare called just a walking shadow, a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. And those of you who know your Shakespeare know that comes from Macbeth, when Lady Macbeth had committed the ultimate sin of killing the king while he was a guest in her house. This ancient sin against hospitality. And in the symbolism of the play, the king there is not just an individual, but also represents the highest principle in life. And if you kill the highest principle that is a guest in your house, then life becomes empty. Life becomes just a tale told by an idiot. And that is what is seemingly about to happen in our world. And there is a way to work with life that follows a different thread, that reclaims that divine connection to life, not as something abstract, not as an idea, something you read about in a book, but in our practice, it's something you breathe with. something you live with, something that flows with you, and something you make a relationship with. And it has both the ancient knowing of life, and also it understands the possibilities for the future evolution of the world. And I say possibilities very deliberately, because the book of life is not written down and fixed. This is why the Chinese Taoist sages wrote the Book of Changes, as a deep understanding of this wisdom of the Tao, of this wisdom of life. There are possibilities within life. It is not fixed. The different potentials within life that one can work with. And so one can really be the... When people talk about co-creationism, which has become a kind of popular term now, it is actually real. And I've been fascinated to say in the last few months I've been taken there into that dimension of working with the energies of life. One can change the dream. One can recreate the patterns of life on a primal level. Not just on the surface, because if you do something on the surface, the wind will blow and it will all be gone. But you can go beneath the surface of life to where there are these very, very powerful, very ancient energies. Whether you call them the spirits, you call them the archetypes, whatever, they are the energies that create the images that dominate our dream. For example, our complete infatuation with materialism, which if you look at logically, going to Target is not going to fulfill your soul. You know, even getting the latest computer or whatever is not going to fulfill your soul. But we think somehow we have been caught in this dream that it will. So we live in this culture in which we work incredibly hard, drive ourselves, so we can accumulate this stuff. That is the dream. That is this self-destructive dream, or part of it. And it's now evoking other strange energies which are there in the archetypal world. But one can actually go within that structure of life to where these energies are waiting for us to work with. And what are they waiting for? They are waiting for this divine spark of consciousness, which they don't have in the same way. In our path, for example, we are taught that the human being can go even higher than angels. There's a certain point in evolution, a certain point in that the angels cannot go beyond, because they don't have this divine spark of consciousness which can allow us to make a mistake. It's called free will in this world. It's actually a spark of complete divine consciousness, the highest consciousness. And that is why it allows us to make a mistake, because the divine is completely free. Somehow we don't realize that. We kind of limit the behavior of the divine. For example, we think the divine has to be good. That's just because we're terrified of the reality. That good is something we have created in our own mental construct, so we can be safe. And the moment you work with the divine, as mystics, we know we are not safe. We have gone beyond that image of life as something we have to protect ourselves from all the time. We have stepped into this other image of the divine as a lover who is both powerful and destructive and beautiful and terrifying and all of that. But what I want to say is we have this, each of us, have this spark of divine consciousness. It is the light of the soul. When we are born into this world, we bring it into this plane of manifestation. And part of a lot of spiritual practice is learning how to be with it. First learning to actually recognize you have this divine spark, and then you do practices that teach you how to work with it. And that is what helps you to evolve spiritually, bringing this light into yourself. And that is what guides you on the journey home. But there is another aspect of spiritual work that that is not so well known, which is how to use that spark of divine consciousness for the sake of the whole, and how to bring it into the energy structure of life. Because what the alchemist discovered is that spark of divine consciousness is a catalyst. Now, everything in nature evolves. Everything in nature changes. If you came back in a million years' time, you would find the earth had evolved. Just like if you went back a million years, you would find the earth had evolved. But it is a very, very slow, gradual process of evolution. It is part of the way nature evolves. But if you add a spark of divine consciousness to it, it speeds up this process of evolution. It adds a whole other range of possibilities into the process of evolution. And this is part, if you want to know, of the big experiment of the world. For many, many millions of years, it did not have that spark of divine consciousness, and it evolved slowly. And it went through many, many catastrophes and seemingly almost self-destroyed at different times. And you can see that when you see the end of the dinosaurs and all of that. It was, you know, the different experiments in creation of life. And then they were wiped out, and then something else came along. And traditionally, at the end of any failed experiment, there is a dark age, when the forces of life withdraw before the next stage of evolution happens, and then this extraordinary creativity and abundance we call life comes once again to the surface with a new form, a new way of being. And it also actually happens in human history too. You can see this, for example, in Europe. We had at the end of the Roman Empire what's called the Dark Ages, where there were many centuries of darkness in Europe, and life was very, very insecure. I say traditionally, this is what happens at the end of any era, is the energies of life withdraw. And then a new spark comes forth, a new divine expression comes forth, a new form of civilization comes forth. But in the patterns of nature, this changes very, very slowly, and the Dark Ages are often hundreds, if not thousands of years long. With human beings, we speed it up. And we also bring with us, with this divine consciousness, we bring a new set of possibilities through which the energies, the primal energies of life, can recreate themselves, can evolve, can create, if you like, another dream. It is very interesting because we think that our life has substance. We don't even realize that it is a dream we are living. Years and years ago, I was told in a dream, actually, that only saints and animals are realists. Because animals live their natural selves and saints have woken up. Everybody else lives a dream. And there is, in the Zen tradition, there is this moment, it's called Satori, when you actually wake for the dream, for a moment. And you are present in the world around you. And it is a completely different world than the world of your dream. It has no desires, it has no fears, it has no anxieties. It just is. This is this pristine, pure experience of creation. Now just imagine for a moment, if you can, if you had no fears, no desires, no expectations, no hopes, if your life just was. If you see that, you can see how much of your life is this personal and collective dream. Now the beauty of it is divine consciousness is very, very powerful. Your individual divine consciousness, you haven't learned to work with yet, is very, very, very powerful. And it can interact directly with the forces of creation. Now what is very, very interesting is in previous eras, only a select few people were allowed to do that. Whether you were priest, priestess, or shaman, or magus, you were given the initiations that enabled you to work directly with the forces of creation. You could interact with the gods directly. And there were very, very strict trainings and, say, initiations that you had to go through before you could do that, before your consciousness could interact directly with the forces behind creation. And that is one of the reasons we have so little, there are so little texts about it. I know there were some in Tibet that were destroyed that describe this process. It is what belongs to the initiates. I have memories of Tibet when a lot of work was done on that. I don't know much about other parts of the world. They used to work, the high priests in Tibet worked very much with those energies within the earth. But the difference now in this present time, and this has to do with oneness, is anybody who wants to, with the right intention, can do that. You do not need to be, for example, like the Kogi. In the Kogi, their shamans actually had to be trained for the first 49 years of their life. They weren't allowed into the light. They were trained in a cave. So they were completely familiar with the inner world and how to work with the inner world. Well, most of us don't have 49 years to go into a cave, and there aren't so many caves around. Seven. Yeah, but the high priest had to do 49 years. Yeah, the low priest only had to do 7. But at this time in evolution, a certain door has been opened that wasn't opened before. It's a very beautiful door. I've seen it. It's been opened. And it is a door, if you like, in the collective soul of humanity. Because humanity is not actually an individual collection of individuals. It is a living life force. It is very, very beautiful when you see it as a whole. Yes, it is very troubled at the moment, and there is a deep sadness in it, particularly to do with the treatment of the feminine. There is a veil in the collective soul of humanity because it has been mistreated. And it has been actually, what is interesting, it has actually been quite deliberately mistreated. It is not just chance. Certain masculine forces got out of control. And they deliberately went against the ancient laws of nature to have power over the world. I'm not going to go into it in detail about what happened, but we are living at the end of that imbalance. They decided that they wanted complete control over the forces of nature, and they went about it very systematically without caring at all about what was sacrificed in this journey of domination. Also has had a certain effect, which means certain old ways of working with the energy of life are closed. There is too much abuse has happened. In the same way as if a human being is abused, if you work with them psychologically, there are certain avenues that are closed to you. You have to find a back way in. There is too many wounds to directly confront the human being. Too much anger comes up, for example, if a human being has been abused. And this patriarchal abuse, not just of the... We see the abuse on the outer, we see the ecological abuse, but actually abuse of the energy structure of the world, which is something very sacred and very beautiful, and a misuse of its energies for the pure purposes of masculine power, have created a certain effect. That means that traditional ways in a more harmonious culture of working with the energies in life are almost inaccessible. If you are very, very wise and have deep, deep understanding of life, you can probably find your way in there. But there is also part of the mystery of life, and it's what Rumi says somewhere. He says, when all doors seem closed, then a mysterious door is opened somewhere else. And the beauty of this mysterious door is it's open everywhere. And because it's open everywhere, nobody sees it. It's one of the great jokes. The Sufis always say, if you want to hide something, put it in plain view. It's one of the great esoteric secrets of humanity. Then nobody will notice it. If you give something away, nobody will take it as has any value. And what it means is a certain direct connection to this energy structure of life is now directly accessible within everybody's heart. It's not in their mind, but it's in their heart. If you have a certain attitude of compassion and care and love, you can be there, right at the source of creation, and you can participate. If you want something for yourself, then the door is closed. And I have seen people come to that door and then decide, oh, they wanted something for themselves. And it's like in those fairy stories or in Lord of the Rings, then it becomes a mountain wall and you cannot go through. But if you come to that door in your heart that belongs to all of life, that recognizes that all of life is sacred, and you come to it with the simple attitude of one human being wanting to help life, then the door is open. And then you are given access to energies within life that used to belong just to the initiate. And then your consciousness can go there. And your consciousness can participate in the real work of co-creating, which is to co-create a new dream, to give humanity a new dream. Humanity as a whole, as every living person on the planet, is not going to wake up for many, many thousands of years. There is a possibility, it is written in the book somewhere, many millennia in the future. This is the bodhisattva motive. The bodhisattva has to stay here until every living thing is enlightened. So the whole of humanity is not going to wake up completely. But it can be given a more beneficial dream, a dream that nourishes the soul, the dream that nourishes the soul of life, a dream in which the energies within life can be used beneficially. And to me, the most visible expression of this new dream is oneness. And as far as I can see, that is the core of the new dream that is being offered to humanity. Now, it is not a thought, it is not a concept, it is a living energy of creation. It is alive. Oneness actually is a divine imprint within creation. There are certain divine imprints within creation. And at different eras, humanity has been given the knowledge and the spiritual understanding of how to work with those divine imprints. There was actually a time, believe it or not, long, long ago, when the warrior was a divine imprint within creation that needed to be lived. Not in the way we see it now, in a completely different way. It had to do with a certain sacred energy being made manifest. But the energy now, at this era, as far as I can see, has to do with oneness. And it has to do with oneness not as an idea, but as a living substance. It is part of the mandala of life. This oneness that is present within everything, that connects everything together. It moves very, very, very quickly. Everything is connected together in oneness, but it is there as a latent imprint in the energy structure of life, in the living substance of life, underneath the surface. When the primal energy of creation first begins to manifest, it carries that imprint. It does not mean that it is going to automatically come into human consciousness. Because there are many, many people who are alive today who have no understanding of oneness at all, who actually live their whole life based upon the fact that they are separate from everything else. And they want to get whatever they can. I think it's called the American dream. But our individual divine consciousness, this spark that we all have within us, that we brought with us when we came into this world, this beautiful, beautiful light, it can interact directly with this seed within the energy structure of life. And then many, many, many things can happen that couldn't otherwise happen. It's very, very simple. It's your divine light interacts with this oneness within life. It's called a catalyst. I mean, that's what the alchemists didn't know what was happening when they put different chemicals together, and suddenly all sorts of other things started happening. And I'm convinced, for give you one little example, that if this is done, then magic can return to life. I'm completely convinced of that. We have actually killed off a lot of the magic. It was done very, very systematically by men who were terrified of feminine magic. I mean, they made one big mistake in Europe. I don't know if you know, because they killed all the cats, because cats were associated with witches. This was slightly sort of narrow-sighted, because when the plague came, there weren't any cats to kill the rats or the mice. It was one of those slightly, you know, misunderstandings. And it was one of the reasons that, you know, half of Europe got completely obliterated, was because there weren't any cats left, because they actually systematically killed off all the cats. It's interesting, you can see little echoes of that. It's also what happened in Ireland in a different way. You know this whole myth that there aren't any snakes in Ireland? That the Christians came, or one Christian saint killed all the snakes in Ireland. I don't know if you know where that myth came from, is because, you know, first in Ireland there were the Druids and then there were the Celts, or is it the other way around? I'm not quite sure. Druids first, Celts. And they had this ancient wisdom to do with the energies of life, this ancient shamanic wisdom that was very much rooted in Ireland. And part of that, the symbol of that wisdom is, of course, a snake, because a snake has always been an image of the primal energies of life. That's why you have the healing, you know, the healing staff that has these two snakes going around it. And the Christians came and they actually very systematically got rid of this old wisdom. And then it became incorporated into this story that the Christian saint killed all the snakes in Ireland, which he did, because he killed off all of that ancient wisdom. So it wasn't there anymore. But it does seem that if our consciousness, this little light within us, this very, very pure light that has the purpose of our own soul, and if you actually go into it, it tells you exactly what your life is about, exactly why you are here, which is often quite different to the dream you are living, that it can interact with this imprint of oneness that is within life. And from that seed, from that alchemical interaction that is like a seed, many, many different things can happen that cannot otherwise happen. Just like in an alchemical reaction, all sorts of things take place. And it can create a new dream. It can create possibilities within the psyche of humanity that were not there before. One of the first signs of this happening is hope. If you go into the energy structure of life, you see a little bit of hope there that wasn't there 20, 30 years ago. You see there is within life, there is this magic waking up. Do you think I'm allowed to come alive again? You know, we have forgotten that life is alive. It's amazing how we treat it as something that is dead. And if you go into life, and you go into this secret doorway that is your direct connection with life, you don't have to do anything. We are completely addicted to doing. But just to be there, to be present for one moment, to be present. And if you find it helpful to use the breath, because for many people the breath helps us to be present. Just to be present at that doorway where you and life are one. And to be present there with compassion, with love. And to be present there not for yourself, but for life. Then this magic can take place as your light interacts directly with the soul of the world, with this beautiful, beautiful substance. I say substance, it's a living substance, it is a light, it is an energy, it is that one can call the anima mundi, the soul of the world. And it can come together. And then we start a real healing, not a surface healing, not a symptomatic healing, but a real healing that is our recognition of what is sacred within life and always has been sacred. And then we can start the work of co-creating a completely different civilization, a completely different dream. And the beauty of it is this dream that we can create does not belong to the past. It is actually being created somewhere else entirely. Many, many things that we think are obstacles are just because we are seeing it with the dream of this present culture. And this new stage, this new evolution has been prepared for. One of the reasons I wanted to call this gathering the Web of Light is there is a whole spiritual work that has been done over the last 20 years of creating a web of light around the world in the spiritual body of the world, not yet in human consciousness, that is a web of light. It has been very, very beautifully created. It is created out of the highest intentions in life and a certain energy from somewhere else. To be a container for this, what I call awakening to oneness, for this global spiritual awakening. Because any spiritual awakening has to be global, otherwise complete waste of time. Everything now has to be global. If your awareness is not global, then forget about it, because oneness by its very nature is global, includes everything. And this has been prepared for, a certain container has been created, and now it has been given to humanity, like a gift, because every stage in human evolution is always a gift. It's one of the basic principles of spiritual practice. Yes, you do all the work of preparation, whatever tradition you belong to, but when it comes, it is always a gift. It is just the nature of spiritual life. And we have to then to receive that gift and to work with it. And so this container has been created. But it needs our spark, it needs our breath, it needs our presence at that center of life that is within ourselves. It isn't anywhere else. So say you don't have to go to the rainforest, you don't have to go to the mountains. Yes, there are certain power places in the world where it can be worked with more easily. And for some bizarre reason, California contains a couple of them. They say there is a certain energy in California that belongs to the next evolution, next cycle of the world's evolution. And so there is a certain work here that can accelerate the process, which has nothing to do with real estate prices. But maybe it does. Maybe everybody is in California because, anyway. But there is a certain energy here that can flip on a switch. And it hasn't actually yet been fully activated. A little bit. A few little experiments have been done. But where something can wake up more easily than somewhere else. It has to do with the magnetic structure of the world. And the fact that the magnetic structure of the world is actually changing, it is very subtly changing. And one of the places where it has the most direct visible impact is actually in California. And so there is a certain work that can be done here more easily. It doesn't mean it can't be done in other places, but you can have more direct access to a certain energy that is... I mean, you know that you need a spiritual energy to work on yourself. It's why you find a teacher, it's why you meditate, but there are also certain places in the energy structure of the world that are more accessible, that can bring a certain energy to the surface more. I think in England, Stonehenge once was one of those places. So that is what we are trying to do, to connect. It is not abstract. It has to do with a living presence within oneself and a living presence within life. And a yes. If you're a maybe a kind of a person, then forget it. Because a maybe will draw you into all of the doubts and the disaster in this present dream. It is just, look around you, even here. I mean, if you're a maybe kind of a person, you'll be dragged into the despair of a dying culture, which is not a very pleasant place to be. There are very, very strange things going on. Some of it on the surface and a lot of it under the surface at this present time. If you can, you don't want to put too much attention there, because it will drain all of your energy out of you. And you will be trying to fight battles with a culture that is dying. There's this lovely quotation I read a while ago. In each age, there is a dream that is dying and a dream that is being born. And the work we are trying to do here is about the dream that is being born. There are many wonderful causes you can follow that are actually underneath it part of the dream that is dying. And as I say, the dream that can be born is about a direct connection back to the source of life. It is not building on the images of the past. We don't realize that our dream can shift 180 degrees because we have been conditioned that this is the only way human beings can exist. It's always intrigued me how much any other viewpoint has been censored from us. And one of my early studies was in medieval architecture. And in order to study that, you have to become aware that people at the time lived in a symbolic world. They lived in a completely different state of consciousness. They lived a different dream. In what gave them meaning was symbolic relationship to life. And when the Puritans finally banned the maypole dancing in England, something died. That particular relationship to life was broken. And one of the reasons I love Shakespeare is there is a certain magic in his plays, like in Midsummer Night's Dream in the figure of Puck, that belongs to a different dream when something was alive that by the 18th century had been broken. But if this dream of oneness, and it is a dream, it is not reality. Mystically, spiritually, it is not reality. I always say reality is something completely different. Reality is, from a mystical point of view, far too terrifying, far too absolute. But this oneness, it is a dream. It is a very, very beautiful dream because it is a dream that directly connects the soul to life and our soul to the soul of the world and welcomes the divine back into life, welcomes that spark of divine oneness that is the higher consciousness of life back into life. And we don't have to do it anywhere else. It is present at each moment in time. And we have to allow ourselves to be used. And this is very difficult for people, particularly some people who have been misused, to become vulnerable to life again. They say you have to be a yes person. You have to say yes, because oneness is not a maybe. Oneness is the primal yes of life. And you have to be allowed to be vulnerable to life. And I understand that is very difficult for many people. Many people are wounded, and in fact their wounds are what strangely draws them into spiritual life, draws them to do practices. But for a moment, it doesn't have to be all day, but for a moment one has to step into that place of vulnerability, that place of, I don't know. Because there, something very beautiful in the human being opens up. For some reason, we have been brought up to believe that we should know. I guess this is patriarchal power drive. We should know, we should be in control. And one of the first things that happens in spiritual life is you realize you don't know. You don't know why you're here. You don't know what your life is about. And it is to be able to live that, I don't know. I am here for your sake. That's what we Sufis say. I do not ask to see, I do not ask to know, I ask only to be used. And then something can happen, because then you give a space for the divine, for these energies within life, for this primal explosion of life to take place. That is why the Sufis say it is the consent that draws down the grace. If you just say yes, then a doorway opens. And if you say yes to life, not life as this present dream, please. That is not life. That is a really bad, or it's a really bad negative fantasy of men. I hate to say it. But what most people call life, particularly in America, is a male fantasy gone bad. It's like giving a guy all the toys and gadgets he could ever think of and saying, you don't have to relate to anybody now. You can screw who you want to screw, you can do what you want to do. And that's what people call life. That is not life. Life is something else. Life is something infinitely precious. Life is those first flowers of spring coming up. In England, they are snowdrops, just coming through the snow. That is life. That is full of hope. That is full of expectation. That is also full of beauty, full of, I don't know what it's about. And if we can be there at that moment, at that place, at that presence, that is here, now. And then we can be part of the dream that is being born, of this very, very orgasmic experience of life recreating itself. It is not an idea, it is not a concept. It is tremendously alive. And it needs us. It needs us who have this spark of something that is awake. Because you wouldn't be here if you didn't have that spark. If life hadn't called you back to something in yourself, you would be still out in this masculine bad dream. But it's this spark. Something in you has responded to something much, much deeper than you know, much, much older than you know consciously. That is about you, and it is about life and a relationship. And it is very, very simple. It is not complicated. It's very, very simple. It is about life recreating itself with the help of the divine consciousness that is within individual human beings. That means your divine consciousness and its relationship to the soul of the world, to this beautiful, beautiful energy that is life, as it always was, before it got covered over, before it got stuck somewhere. The danger is, if we don't do it consciously, this is a very real danger, if we don't do it consciously, then the energy within life will do it of its own accord, negatively, or it will appear negative to us. It will do it through violence. It will break out of this dream violently, destructively. And then it could take many hundreds of years for humanity to recover. I think Jung said somewhere, if you don't acknowledge something, it happens to you as fate. And if you look at the forces in the world, they are teetering on the edge. They can last another 20 years or so like they are at the moment. Maybe less, I don't know. I don't like to look too closely. But there are ancient forces. See, I will just explain a few more minutes. At the end of every era and the beginning of a new era, there are certain forces present within life that are not present at any other time. Certain energies that are here to help, that belong to the transition. There are energies that are here to destroy the old civilization, and there are energies that are here to create the new civilization. They only appear, they only come to the surface at the end of an era. Otherwise, then withdraw back into the depths. They also happen at an individual level when you come to certain transitions in your life. And certain forces come from the depths within you that only appear at that time. And they have a certain violence to them. And that violence is needed to both destroy and create, because that moment of destruction and recreation is like birth. And many women know birth has a certain violence to it. And there are those forces here. And we have no idea what they will do, because they belong to the very depths of creation. They belong to life needing to change to survive. And we don't even have really much of a memory in our culture of what they are about. And if we don't relate to them, if we are not there to welcome them in, they can be very, very, very destructive. Just exactly the same as in the life of an individual, when there are forces from the unconscious that are pushing you to make a change, a transition in your life. You can either go there and work with them beneficially and creatively, and you only then get a minor breakdown. Or you can deny them. And there are people who've ended up in hospital as a result, who have been forced through an accident or an illness to lose their present structure, life structure. And many of us know people like that. Maybe some of you are people like that. And exactly the same, except the forces in the depths of creation are very, very, very powerful. There was a little echo of them in what happened in the last year, in the tsunami, and what happened in New Orleans. They are like a little, delicate little introduction on the piano. Yeah? Can we just stay there just for a moment, just to stay in that place within ourselves where our light is present with life? And breathe with it so it goes beyond the mind. Breathe with it so it's part of the body. And remember, your breath is the breath of life. And feel how you are part of the whole of life. All of life, everything. And you are also a spark of divine intention, going into this whole, going into the whole of life. And that is where miracles can happen. And that is where a new dream can come alive. As it has done many times before. And there are many, many, many beings and spirits and entities wanting to help us in this work. Please remember that. Many forces in the inner worlds are waiting for us to make this step. Then they can help us. Then they can work with us. Then they can redeem the world with love.
You said something about us creating or building the images for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And my question was, I guess the place where I come from is sitting in my room by myself creating, you know, an image for the future by myself. But I think what you're talking about maybe is something more inclusive of groups of people together coming to an image for the future, something like that. I don't really understand.
Okay, first of all, it's an important question because it's a very practical question. First of all, there is no such thing as sitting by oneself. It does not exist. You are never alone. And the moment you realize that you step out of this image, this dream, this fantasy of your own separate self. And you can either, there are two ways you can do it. You can either step out of it through direct experience, mystical experience of the divine, of oneness, which many people have, or you can also use the imagination to step out into this other reality, or this reality that is much more present, which is we are all connected. And that's one of the reasons I like the internet, because it's actually a symbol, a living symbol that's been given to humanity to express this interconnected oneness. And the moment you realize you're not alone, you are an organic center of light that belongs to this organic light structure. And so if your consciousness is being used to create an image, your consciousness that is creating this image is directly connected to the conscious, it is the consciousness of the whole. And you don't know how your consciousness is being used. This is the beauty of it. You don't know how what you are doing in your room, this awareness that you have, you don't know how this interconnects with the oneness of life. You don't know what is being resonated around this whole web of life that's also a web of light. And it works completely differently to our logical, rational mind. Why? Because it is alive and it belongs to God. And it is very, very, very beautiful. And it needs our consciousness to bring something alive. And it needs our individual consciousness. Yes, it can function in a group like this. It cannot function in an organization. It cannot function in a hierarchy. If you have any hierarchical organization, it's dead. That belongs to the dream of the past. The life energy is already being withdrawn from them. They function dysfunctionally. You can say that. Organic structures that move, that change, that are not fixed, that is where life is recreating itself. And we are part of it. And as I said, you don't have to go off and do anything. You just have to, if you're a person that's drawn to groups, then you will participate in groups. If you're a person who's drawn to being alone, it will be alone. What's most important is you hold the image and you recognize its sacred dimension. Because it is your conscious awareness of the sacred dimension of an image that gives you access to its power, what Jung called its numinosity, the sacred dimension of the imaginal archetypal world. And once you recognize its sacredness, then it is like a key that can unlock the living energetic potential in that image. Jung said clearly, he said, it is the archetypal images that decide the fate of man. He said, it's not consciousness. It's not what happens in the conscious self. It is the archetypal images. They are incredibly powerful. He called them the riverbeds of life through which the energy of life flows. They are held in the consciousness of human beings who are attuned to their own divine potential. Then they bring that divine energy into life to recreate life once again in a direct relationship between the divine and life. And it doesn't matter where you are, because you are life. This spark of life that has been given this individual identity. Each of us here is a spark of life that is just part of life. And it can create images. And it can be used to create the images of the future or drown in the images of the past.
So Llewellyn, this is the second time I've heard you talk about this work with women, and something in me deeply understands that. And I'm wondering if you'd be willing to provide some instruction or direction how to begin to deepen into that process.
The work I am describing for women to do. Oh, that work to do with the spiritual body of the world. What comes to me is, first, women need to reattune themselves with the sacred rhythm of life, which is something we have forgotten, because there is a certain work that can only be done in this world when you are attuned to that rhythm. You can work in the inner planes out of the body, it doesn't matter, but if you want to work in this world, first of all, you have to, it is like the breath of life. Your breath has to be the breath of life. You just go, you breathe with the world. You align yourself with the sacredness of matter. And so in a way, you become one body. And then when you are in tune with the rhythm of life, which is your rhythm, then something, there is this opening between you and life. There is this, you see, feminine mysteries held the secrets of creation for thousands and thousands of years. And this was the work of the priestesses in the temples. They held this for humanity, and they, this sacred understanding of the relationship between spirit and matter. And when the patriarchy came and it killed the priestesses and cut that sacred understanding. So it is for each woman first to respect that part of herself and that rhythm within her. I wonder if it has to do with what you talk about, the moon rhythm, in reading some of your books, this moon rhythm, which is the cycle of life and this deep connection that a woman has that a man doesn't with the, it's in the blood, with this deep understanding of life. So you first have to familiarize yourself with that until it is completely like the breath, like the awareness. So your breath and the breath of the world are in harmony. Then something can be given through you into the world that can start its healing process. Because there is always a part of the human being that never fully incarnates. For example, one of the things in our practice when we do the breath, we're told to be aware of the breath, and particularly the space between the in-breath and the out-breath. And if you watch your breath, there is this moment at the end of the in-breath, which is a moment of bliss. At the end of every in-breath, there is a moment of bliss, which is the moment the soul goes back to its own plane. Which is why, for example, they say that the last breath of a dying person is always an in-breath. The last gasp, the soul goes back to its own plane and it doesn't come back. So there is always part of the soul that never fully incarnates in this plane. And if there is a beautiful image of this, actually, it's in Jung's Memories, Dreams, Reflections, when he had this dream experience and he was walking down this little road in Switzerland, and he came upon this roadside shrine. And he went in there, and in this little roadside shrine there was no cross, there was nothing. But there he saw this yogi in deep meditation. And he looked at the face of the yogi, and he saw the yogi's face was his face. And he was aware that if that yogi came out of meditation, he, Jung, would die. And that is the part of the spiritual being of everybody that remains outside this world. And this is traditionally, in most people's near-death experiences, this is actually the light they meet at the end of the tunnel. They say it's God because that is their nearest experience of God. It's not God. If you met God, there would be no tunnel, there would be nothing. God is so tremendous, so vast, so incomparable, beyond even our idea of the beyond. But that light is the light of your own divine essence, which is, for most people, their experience of God. That incredibly bright light that's there waiting for them. Most people reconnect with that after they die. In mystical practice, you die before you die, so you reconnect with that, you live that while in this body. But it never completely incarnates. And in that spiritual self, there is a certain energy that can help the evolution of the world. If you are, it is in a way, it has to do with the divine intention of creation. And when a human being is aligned with that and present in life, it can come through your spiritual body. So it remains outside of the cycle of creation. And this is very, very important, because it means it cannot be contaminated. Everything, the moment it hits the planes of creation, it is caught
in the play of light and dark that belongs to creation. Even in the archetypal world, it isn't good and bad there, but there are shadows. But this stays on the plane of the self. It is completely uncontaminated. It has to do with the real purity of the human being. And that light can be given through your spiritual centers directly into the spiritual energy structure of this planet. And it has in it both divine intention, but also the purpose. It's like Sandra was saying, there is awareness, but there is intention. And intention is a certain energy to make something happen. And the first thing it has to do is to clear certain blocks that exist in the energy field of the world before something can happen. Just as the same way as an individual transformation, you have to do a certain purification before a certain energy can flow through you. And then that's the first thing it can do. And it is, remember, it has divine intention and it is not contaminated. It is very, very pure. It is like quicksilver. It is like this alchemical thing. And it can go, I always say, it can go to places that other energy cannot go. Because it belongs, it has this direct connection between the creator and the creation that is uncontaminated by the play of good and bad and free will and everything like that. And the first thing it do, there are certain places in the energy structure of the world that have become locked. And it can go there and it can take away, it can absorb certain impurities. And that is a work that's beginning to happen now. And then the next stage is for the energy to actually begin to... There are certain switches they exist in the spiritual structure of a human being, and they also exist in the spiritual structure of the world. And for example, one of the reasons traditionally there comes a point when you need a spiritual master is you need somebody to turn those switches on inside of you that give you access to different frequencies of energy. And it's called, I suppose they call it now, opening the chakras. There's a lot of misunderstanding about that because you do not want them opened or awakened before you're ready, because you get flooded then with an energy you cannot contain. But there, just like there are in a human being, there are certain energy centers, and you can, if you know how to do it, you flip. It's a bit like flicking a switch, and then you give them access to a whole different energy they have latent within them, and it's exactly the same in the energy field of the world. That is why the world is not going to evolve linearly, because a human being does not evolve linearly, and we are the microcosm of the whole. A human being is, this person said, you wake up, says Satori, you wake up, and it's a whole different level of consciousness is given to you, because something flicked a switch. At a particular time in your evolution, a switch was flicked. And those exist, and there's one here in Northern California. It's actually quite a big switch. And it's actually one of the reasons that so many spiritual groups gravitated towards here, because they are waiting to participate in a certain spiritual awakening. But it has to be right. There has to be a certain balance. There has to be a certain harmony. There has to be a certain receptivity of consciousness to contain what is going to be given. Otherwise, the energy will just flow completely out of the energy field of this world, and it will go somewhere else, and then the moment will be lost.
Just to give 5 minutes of one's day of pure awareness for the sake of life, not my life, not the life of my friends, but life. Just to, in one's meditation, to include the world, to go to this place that is the most sacred place in creation, which is where you can see it. Actually, it's very beautiful. Sandra was saying about love. There is this beautiful place in the inner worlds where love comes. And you can see it, and it comes out of the emptiness, and love comes. And then love at the beginning is completely formless. And then it takes on the light of creation. At the beginning, it is a very, very pure light. It is almost invisible. It is so pure. And then this extraordinary mystery happens, as if it like comes through a prism. And out of that single pure light, the colors of creation manifest. And we, because it is at this moment of transition, we are allowed, and this is so sacred, to create the forms of the future. In the middle of an era, they have been created. You work with them, yes. You create beautiful cathedrals out of them. You make beautiful music out of them, whatever. But the forms of the future have not yet been created. And all of us here who have an awareness are allowed to go there and to start. These are the very, a certain groundwork has been done, and now this energy can begin to take on forms, and forms that belong to our sacred connection to life and to the divine within ourselves. And to me, that is very, very important work to do. And it is out of that, out of few groups of people around the world, that the next era will come into being. Or not. Or not.